This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3373 for Wednesday, the 7th of July 2021. Today's show is entitled HPR RPG Club Reviews Starfinder, and is part of the series Tabletop Gaming. It is hosted by Claw2, and is about 86 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Starfinder is a sci-fi RPG using Dungeons, Empires and Dragons 3.5 rules.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everybody, this is Claw2. Thanks for listening to Hacker Public Radio. In this episode, me and the HPR RPG Club review Starfinder. HPR RPG Club is a group of listeners like you who want to get together and play a tabletop RPG game, role-playing game, on, I think, UTC Sunday. That's New Zealand Monday. We play one game for approximately 4 weeks, and then we review it. That's what we're doing today. We got onto a call and reviewed our experience with Starfinder. Starfinder is, don't lose track here, Starfinder is an offshoot of Pathfinder, which is a fork of Dungeons & Dragons at 3.5 edition. So Pathfinder is Dungeons & Dragons 3.5, except rebranded with some rules changes here and there, and further development done on it. And Starfinder is sort of a Pathfinder, but written for space at, let's call it a 3.75 edition, because some of the rules are different, but generally it's the same. This one generated a lot of discussion about the strengths and the weaknesses of the system. We do a lot of comparison, obligatory comparison probably, between Starfinder and Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, which if you've not played either, those comparisons probably won't resonate with you. We tried to keep it down to a minimum, but at a certain point you just can't quite help but compare, so you'll hear a lot of that in this recording. We also talk a lot about the spaceship combat. Of course, being set in space, it's rather inevitable that you're going to get into a skirmish with another spaceship. And so a game set in space needs to have rules to govern that scenario. The rules for that in the book, as it was published, are somewhat infamously, shall I say, intense. And you'll see lots of different opinions online, no surprise there. But I think that the general consensus, and I'm aware that I am hazarding an assumption here, but the general consensus tends to be, from what I can tell, that spaceship combat, as written in the book, is a little bit burdensome. It is probably, from what I've heard, I think it is probably quite a good system if you are getting together with friends to play a spaceship combat simulator. And if that is your only expectation, I think, reasonably, that would be a good system for that. If you're getting together with your friends to play a role-playing game in which people play individual characters with their own choices and their own personalities, that spaceship combat scenario isn't quite maximized for that setting. It's the difference, if you've ever heard people talking about the difference between a tabletop role-playing game and a tabletop war game, kind of the difference between those two things in many ways. So, I have an alternate rule set for Starship Combat that I tried during the game, and then as a special sort of bonus session at the end of the game, we played a traditional, or a rules as written, spaceship combat scenario. So we do touch on the differences a little bit between those two systems, although probably because we were all there and played it, we don't really go into detail. And so I will simply say that the alternate rules try to maximize individual character choices, tries to speed up combat by only requiring you to play until one or the other of the ships reaches half of its hit points. It does away with a lot of the, well, it does away with the phases of combat turns. It just kind of lets everyone go in sequence, do whatever they want to do, using all of their character abilities, or some of their character abilities, and sort of ignoring the spaceship itself, which seems counterintuitive. And again, if you're looking for a spaceship combat simulator, it is counterintuitive. But I find for people who'd want to get together to play people running around in space doing cool things, a simpler, quicker system to resolve spaceship conflict seems to be pretty nice and well appreciated. So I've had good luck with it so far. It is available on DriveThruRPG. Just look up Simple Starship Combat for Starfinder, and it'll come up. It's free or $2, depending on which you prefer, and I highly recommend it. So that was a completely unsolicited ad, which hopefully will get past the censors. But to be fair, I am recommending it not only because I wrote it, but also because I truly believe that it's a good alternative to Starship Combat as written. So if you are planning on playing Starfinder, just kind of keep that in the back of your mind, that alternate rules do exist. People have been trying it out and seem to be pretty happy with it. I certainly have been quite happy with it with the games that I've been playing. So let's get into the review. On this call, you'll hear Benny, Ken Fallon, Padraig, Baffled, and me. So let's first roll for initiative. So roll a d20. And if you have your character sheet, you can add your initiative bonus. If you don't have it handy, that's fine. We'll just roll your d20.
Oh, I should have got my character sheet. It's a plus 6, right? Yeah. So that's 20.
20 for Padraig.
6.
6 for Baffled.
21.
21 for Ken.
I rolled a 16, and I'm trying to find my character sheet. I think it was plus 2, but let's just go with the 16 then.
16, all right. Ken, how did you get 21 on a 20-sided die? Did you add your... you have your character sheet?
I put in the number 21 into this. So let me roll that again, shall I?
21-sided die are my favorite
set of die. This could be an inkling as to my review of this game, by the way. 20. That is
20
amazing.
For Ken.
Let me just try that one more time.
Well, I rolled a 14, but I added what I think is my initiative.
All right, and I just checked on my character sheet. It's actually 2, so my roll is 18.
Oh, then. It is an 18. Okay, so the first question that we should talk about is the character build process, not how the character played, but how it was to actually build the character. Only a few of you on this call did that.
Actually, it was basically one.
Okay, one per- that's what I thought. I wasn't sure if the lore that I had heard was true or not, but I think it sounds like it's true.
Two people have a custom character, but only one person really
built the character. Got it. So, Padraig, how did you find the character build process?
I got my core rulebook. I looked at the part where it says, this is how to build a character, mm-hmm. and I followed the steps closely. I made a character when I knew what to actually do. I made a character for Ken.
How was it, do you feel, compared to like 5th edition build process?
It's more complicated, definitely more complicated. There's a lot more stuff. There is the themes, which I like. I like the themes. Also, I like the fact that you can choose not to have a theme, but there's a little less options in races and in classes, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing, but it is a thing.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot more looking through the book, what is this? There's a lot more writing down on the actual thing. Fifth edition, you just basically, it mostly is just rolling for stats is mostly it, and then few other stuff just reading from the book. But with this, it's a lot more math and complicated stuff like the KACA, AAC, that kind of stuff. Not something you can do in your head.
Yeah, I feel like I agree with you. I think it's more complex in possibly a good way, or not even a good way, just like an alternative way. And I do like the themes as well. And I think that you see this a little bit in 5th edition and you see it a little bit in Starfinder. And I hope other RPGs take note. And that is this idea that there are, like, there's the way to build the character. And then at the end of the paragraph, there's like the, and if you don't care to figure all of this stuff out yourself, here's a quick example, or here's a here are some sane defaults to take. You know, I feel like even in fifth edition, how you have that standard array if you don't want to roll the die for your stats. I kind of like that sort of thing where it's just like, yeah, whatever.
In fifth edition, yeah, basically, you also have that in fifth edition. You have that in Starfinder, you have basically, but there they literally just lay down the path which you should take in fifth edition. They do a start, like they just have it at kind of basically like a small sentence like, okay, if this is your first time playing and you have no clue what to do, this is what you should, and you want to play this class, this is the background you should pick. These are the spells. Do this, but not really impeding on your thing. It doesn't really do that in Starfinder, but it's very much if you want to follow the thing, it goes way further.
One cool thing about Starfinder that I'll quickly mention here too is that the equivalent of the Monster Manual called the Alien Archives, it has a bunch of playable. New playable races, so you can, not all aliens are playable, but there's a good handful of aliens in the Alien Archive that are playable races, so you get a bunch of new races pretty quickly just by expanding your library a little bit.
Oh, I did not know that. That's definitely a good thing, but I overall just like the character building thing. It's different, but it's not necessarily bad. The only thing I would add is just like background, because that's not really there. You have a description and that's everything for what you basically can do with your background and stuff.
That is an interesting omission. That would be a nice thing to have. They probably do have it in a separate book for all I know, but yeah, it's not in the core rulebook.
It's not very clear on what you should do with the factions, because they're like factions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there.
Yep.
In the core rulebook.
Yep.
And it even says that you can be one of these factions and you can believe in these gods, but it doesn't say that anywhere on the character sheet, and it's not really clear if you should or should not do it.
Those are primarily aimed at organized play, where you go to conventions and there's record keeping, and it's a very organized process, and factions play a big role in those games. But yeah, they don't make that clear in the core rulebook at all.
For someone who's never been to any of those things, who just plays
it's completely
at home,
it's totally meaningless.
I like them, and I chose to include it, but I didn't find anywhere where to do it.
Well, Benny, I know that you do have the core rulebook. Did you ever try building a character for Starfinder or no?
No, not at all. I just read through the part where it explains how to do it, but I just skimmed over it, so I couldn't form an opinion in this one.
Fair enough. Back up to the top of the initiatives is Ken now. How was it to play your character? So in other words, did you feel like your character had lots of features and abilities and things like that? Ken?
No, I think I made a fundamental mistake in choosing a coward for my character. And as such, I didn't have any of the weapons or basically all I had was a Swiss Army knife. And that was a major disadvantage. Granted, the sitting along while Podrick created my character for me was quite enjoyable, and I felt this was a really cool character, but I think it was probably a cool character for a different universe than this one.
Yeah, great point. I mean, there are games where that would be completely doable, I think, but I could have run Starfinder to make that possible, but I was running a pre-written adventure, which, you know, focuses. I mean, it was in fact the first adventure that they published for this game system. So it really does focus, as you can almost tell, on like hitting all of the mechanics, and combat is, you know, a big mechanic in D&D style RPGs. There are other RPGs where that's not such a big deal. Developing a coward for your character is like strangely brave as a player, but it does kind of cripple your actual character sometimes.
Yeah, I did warn him. I also warned him that his character was a great utility character, but we had a lot of engineers and he was an engineer, so it wasn't really...
Which he had no control over. Yeah, that was interesting how many people chose the same character type.
Kind of predictable.
Yeah, to be fair. Everyone chose Mechanic, which is, for all intents and purposes, the Tinkerer in Starfinder, and we're on Hacker Public Radio. So yes, it was predictable in retrospect. Podrick, how did you feel about your character? Was it easy and nice to play your character? Lots of features, lots of abilities?
Yes, I definitely enjoyed playing my character. It was fun having a character which was actually, if you looked at the details, acted quite different from other characters. Running headlong into stuff without forming a plan is very much not a thing I usually do. Up close combat was also very fun. I had lots of abilities, especially after I leveled up. The thing is, it's actually with numbers are too big, I think.
Yeah, that's you make a good point about those numbers. They do get really big in Starfinder, and it is a little bit strange. And it makes, at least for the game master, it makes the specifics of following the pre-written module very important, because those numbers, like, I mean, one thing will be a DC 15 and then later it'll be like a DC 35, you know, and it's just like, it's completely like, how do you get to 35 on a 20-sided die? Well, it's all those modifiers, and that's very different than really a lot of other games, I think. Those are big numbers.
Basically, you have to specialize into something. You can't not specialize.
Yeah.
I like
a great
to
point.
Generalize my character and basically have it be able to do a lot of different stuff and do combat. But this was like, okay, so you have to specialize in this and you have to specialize in that, otherwise you'll fail. Any roll under the 10 basically felt like, okay, well, this is a failure. Usually it does that, but even like any roll under the 15 is like, okay, this is not very good.
Benny, what did you think of playing your character?
The first problem of my character was this, as you already pointed out, that there were too many copies of my character joining the game, because we used the pre-gen mechanic and others used, I think Baffled used the same character. And at the beginning, there was someone else. At first, I chose like two or three of the pre-gen characters, and then in the first session we were only three people and I was the only one using this character, so that's why I kept it. I think I would have gone with another character if I knew that the next session there will be more copies of myself. Apart from this, it was a fun character to play, because you have all these options. You even have this drone you can use. When you attack, you get an attack for yourself and you can have your drone attack. The other thing I enjoyed having but never used except for once in the first session is my cheek pouches, where I can keep, like, for the size of the character, a huge amount of stuff in cheeks.
Yes, that's because you're a rat person, and they could stuff their cheeks full of whatever random stuff they want.
Yeah, exactly. It was like a third of my height cube that I could stuff into my cheeks. So it's like, I'm not sure how this physically works, but it was fun having. There were a couple of things in the character I never quite got how to use them. So I'm not sure whether those were just numbers that were calculated into the stats anyway and didn't matter, or whether I just didn't get what it meant and never used it. But I think some of it might be a bit too complicated for a pre-gen character, which is meant to be played in an introductory game. I think that's how they designed the character. It was like saying, well, if you don't want to go through the whole build and everything, just use those characters and do this adventure. I think they give in, I'm not sure whether it was in the core rulebook or whether it was in a starter kit, where they give you an adventure to play along with those characters.
Yeah, I think that's in the starter kit. The introductory end of Starfinder is just, it's non-existent. You know, it's like, even as an introductory thing where your character's already built for you, the place where you're starting is just way up here, you know, and you just have to know all of this information. A simpler level one character sheet would be a nice thing to have.
And I think it also adds to the complexity that your characters live in a world which is completely different to our world. It's not just our planet and another reality popped over it. It's like, it's completely different in space and everything. But we'll discuss I think we'll discuss the world later.
Baffled, what did you think about playing your character?
It was fun. There were so many parameters to the character, and being a relative newbie to RPGs, I didn't, and I still don't, know what the large majority of those things are. I could just sort of only follow along and go, yeah, sure, I'll go with that. And with a lot of help being explained what they all did, you know, I think one of the things is that a lot of people chose mechanics, as you pointed out. They were things that we were already familiar with as hackers. A lot of the other character types that were offered as far as pre-gen characters went are things I just have no feeling for or connection to, so I didn't feel I could choose one of them. They were sort of totally alien to my mindset of what would I do as a biohacker? What would I do as a necromancer? Or whatever it was, technomancer?
Technomancer, yeah.
I don't even know what those things are. So I ended up sort of speaking to mechanics because that's, as a hacker, that's what you know.
To be fair, as the game master, I could have, and in retrospect, maybe should have had people choose their character beforehand and then made sure that nobody was choosing the same character. I just kind of felt like it might be interesting to see what would happen if people chose the same class, because in theory, that shouldn't be a problem. However, I think since they were pre-generated and people were literally taking the exact same mechanic, I probably should not have gone that route. So that's a little bit on me.
It was fun, though. I mean, I had no problem with having three mechanics. Yeah,
I mean, the good thing was eventually we knew the stats of the characters.
Yes, we were literally just rattling the modifiers off. Yeah, totally.
May I clarify something I said?
This is highly irregular. This is out of the initiative order, but I'll let you take an exception.
Just in case someone listens to this and gets and thinks like, oh yeah, there's a lot of features. There were a lot of features when I got to second level and I got to choose this feature thing and I had my heavy bone blade. That's the only reason there were a lot of features for me, because I could do this combo during combat. That's the only reason. Features, yes, there are lots of features, but definitely not early, and it's harder to get than you might think from what I just said.
A soldier was the class that you played, correct? Yeah, okay. Let's talk about rules. What did you think of the rules of the game, at least insofar as you understood them? And that can be part of the question, is did you understand the rules? Let's start back up at the top with Ken.
Yes, it all seemed fairly logical, I have to admit. I don't know how much of that is down to... I completely knew this is the first game I've ever played, but I've listened to a few, so it all kind of made sense. And although I did need to rely on both you and Podrick from time to time to explain what I needed to do math-wise.
Yeah, but you kind of get the feel of it pretty quickly, right?
Yeah. No, it was obvious. It became very obvious to me. I could have done with some more weapons, yes.
Just for the record, like in the future, if you're ever playing in a game that I'm running ever again, you realize that you've made a horrible mistake with your character choices, you can totally talk to me and we can make sure that that is repaired, either in story or just magically as a hand wave. So just so you know, like, yeah, just talk to your game master, anybody who ever...
No, it was interesting to play the character out fully.
Okay, cool. Patrick, what did you think of the rules?
Yeah, they made sense. They were very similar to what I already know from 5th edition D&D, though there were some differences, notably what I already said, the higher numbers. That was one thing which really kind of annoyed me. But other than that, it was pretty logical. The AC will split into two pieces because it's the future. Everything apart from like starship combat was fairly logical. Starship combat is weird. It's not necessarily bad, not necessarily good, it's weird. The one thing I would change is just if the numbers were smaller, it would be near the perfect game, I would say. Because numbers are so big, I can't do my preferred style of play, which is only specializing in combat.
Yeah, no, I think you're making a really interesting point about the forced ability of specialization in order to hit those high numbers. I haven't heard it expressed that way, but it's actually really insightful.
It really, really annoyed me. I was, until we I was second level, and we had combat stuff where I could do my cool combos. Until that, I was like, really like, why do they have these large numbers? I can't really do anything. I made my character in a way where it was a little bit spread out, only one rank into anything, which. Yeah, and so I had to go to second level, which no one else did, and to actually be useful. Also, I chose the theme pilot, yet just because my dexterity was a little lower, Ken got to be the better pilot before I reached second level.
Right, interesting.
How is that supposed to work? Just because he's got a steadier hand, he beats the nerdy pilot guy? Don't really understand that.
We're secretly talking about the character build rules again, but I mean, I wonder if the reasoning behind this was, well, we want each player to feel like they have a special sort of talent that nobody else on the team has, and so they're kind of, they don't mind that people are forced into specialization, because that's kind of part of the thing. It's like, well, that's why you're playing this role, because you want to be the guy who can do such and such.
If you do that, that there are other ways to do it, like features, or just having your class just being able to roll higher for this kind of stuff. Just having all the numbers be higher is a possibility, and it will work for those who want to specialize. But if you don't want to specialize and you just want to be a general character, it's very annoying.
Benny, what do you think of them rules?
As everyone else already stated, they're pretty close to 5th edition D&D, so a lot of them already make sense if you know the D&D rules, except for certain stats that are different or don't exist, like the fact that you have KAC and EAC, was it called, and not just an armor class, and hit points work differently, because you've got stamina points first, and when they're used up, you hit on the hit point. But apart from this, was mostly clear. Actually, point is, I liked the fact that the numbers were higher to make a counterpoint here, because it kind of felt right in this world where that everyone has to specialize in something, and as a team, you felt more like you depended on each other than in a D&D game where everyone plays whatever he likes, right? And here you actually have to make sure you have a pilot on the team, because otherwise you won't be able to fly a starship, and you have to make sure that you have a mechanic on the team who's also good with computers, because eventually you want to fix this starship or like hack another starship or something. The downside was, at some point McNallu left the game, so we were the only person with healing powers was kind of gone, and so we had problems staying alive. Because of this, you have to put more effort into designing the team and not just the character. And I think that's also what the pre-gen characters were built to do. That's why the mechanic was actually specialized in engineering and computers. And there was no pre-generated, like, general ability character.
I think in 5th edition, one of the common complaints or criticisms, I guess, is that, yeah, character, like, everyone can cast spells now in D&D, whereas it used to be that wizards could cast spells, or wizards and clerics, and that was it. And if you wanted magic, but nowadays you can just play a rogue and get spells at a certain point. So it definitely encourages the generalization of the characters. This seems to take a different tact.
It's not only that the numbers are higher, it's also the ranges are larger. So for some checks, you might not need such a high number,
and
for other checks you might need a high number. So it's not like you always, for everything, you need a specialized person to do this. Sometimes there are tasks that can be done by everyone, and sometimes there are tasks where you have to have someone who specializes in something.
We get it into our head that we have to roll high, But I mean, sometimes the DC is only 5. You don't have to roll high. You know, you just have to not fail completely. And so it's fine.
With a DC of 5, it also makes sense that some people just succeed without even rolling a die because they're just specializing in something. And this task is so easy that obviously they can't fail because they've got the ability to do like more difficult things in this field.
Yeah. And once again, the sort of the mythos of D&D style games is that if you roll a 1, it's a critical failure. But in reality, that's not true. That's the rules say that that's in combat situations. So if it's like, yeah, you're rolling to, I don't know, log into a computer or something, and it's only a DC 5, you can easily roll a 1 and your bonus of 4 or 5 will get you over that DC. And so you succeed, even though you have literally rolled a 1.
Exactly.
So people forget that a lot, I think. I will bring up some things that you made me think of, though, that I took a note of during play. One is the weapons. Remember, we had a little bit of a problem understanding how to know whether a weapon targets a player's KAC or EAC. And that was a little bit odd, I thought, because there's a lot of terminology around the weapons. And it doesn't really just say in the weapon stat, you know, like targets KAC, which would be beautifully easy. It says like analog. And then I think you go off of the damage type to figure out whether it's EAC or KAC. And I thought that was needlessly complex.
Yeah, I guess that's where this science part of science fiction comes into play.
Yeah, I don't want to think that hard in my RPG. In Starfinder, you have resolve points, which you can spend to regain stamina points. Once you're depleted from your stamina points, you have health points. The idea is that you have resolve to stay alive, and so you're just pushing through, and this builds up your stamina to continue going. But once your stamina and your resolve has drained for the day, then when you take damage, you're actually taking like physical, mental, sort of like actual damage to your body, and that can kill you. So this is obviously a timer technique because they don't want you to be able to just replenish your health points whenever you want, but they do want you to be able to stay alive. So you can spend a resolve if you have it to get your stamina up, and that gives you a little bit of a boost, but then you start to get drained back down. So it's a timer mechanism, which D&D 5th edition does quite elegantly with hit die, where you can take a short rest and you have a certain number of hit die that you can spend to boost your health points back up. And once all your hit die are finished, then you'd better rest for the day because now you're starting to actually be damaged. Two different approaches to the same problem of how to keep characters alive while also making it a risk to be in this world. And I feel like the resolve stamina hit points is a little bit clunky, I feel. The number of resolve points you have to spend starts to increase as your character level increases, which seems weird to me. Why does it take a level 5 character more resolve to stay alive than a level 1 character or whatever? It just feels a little bit weird. And then just having to track 3 values for your health seems really, really kind of clunky to me.
I do like that system. I like the in D&D 5th edition, I usually, whenever it's possible, I take a long rest instead of a short rest because I don't really like the die things. This makes it way easier for me to use because it doesn't feel like, oh no, I have to spend the thing. It's like, it's there. It's supposed to be used. It's not an option. But what I really think was weird, it does make kind of sense, but you can't gain HP back through taking a long rest, because it would make sense because it's not a hospital, and because of that sole reason, my soldier wasn't really able to do a lot in the fight against that space demon thing, which it should have been able to do more. It was not for the fact that its entire HP was completely gone because of the space zombies, which we fought the day before.
But I think I like the idea that you need medical attention when you lose hit points. You can't just rest and then you're fine again, because that's how you gain stamina. That's not how you gain health back. In this game, if you lose health points, it actually means you're physically damaged and you need some attention to get this fixed.
Listening to this conversation has brought up some thoughts about it. Is this universe, I think part of the reason it has this, may have as many attributes and different types of values resolution, stamina, that type of thing is. It appears to be a very in-depth, long-term universe playing style. And coming to it as a pre-gen character and not being familiar with RPG in general, there's no way in the realm of one scenario, or two if you want to call the starship another scenario, that you can really become comfortable with why those rules were set up and why those rules give you so many options. Because really, it appears, from my perspective, that it's a system meant to be played through many different scenarios and have characters build those qualifications and those abilities over a period of time and through a series of adventures. We sort of took a shortcut, it seems to me. At least from my perspective, that's why I don't understand or didn't understand a lot of what all those things I was able to do. I mean, for instance, the cheek pouch. I thought they were cool, but I was never clear whether cheek pouch meant in my cheek until you guys were talking about cheek pouch just now, and we're talking, you know, 5 weeks into the process. I wasn't clear what they meant. I just thought, oh, well, it's a hip pouch that I wear on my butt sort of thing. So I think the rules are probably fine for people who engage in many scenarios of this game, who really get into the universe and really want to play a lot, constantly, different scenarios and stuff like that. I mean, it seems to me that having specialized in mechanics or wizards or whatever, and having the ability or the wish to take on other aspects, so whether a mechanic should be able to do healing or something like that, would need to have some sort of a system of education, and they could work towards other capabilities maybe that they didn't have automatically. You know, because I think everybody gets into a scenario and then they wish they could have something, or they had something they didn't necessarily have when they started out. You know, there's a couple of times when I was sitting back in the ship, being a coward, I was a better coward than Ken was, because I stayed in the ship and just did everything through my drone. But I was wishing that I had the ability to move the ship around, to be a pilot, because there I was all by my lonesome. And, you know, I didn't have the ability to move the ship if it needed to be moved, sort of thing.
There's probably an eternal push and pull for RPG designers, whereby you have to decide, like, when your players start the game, are they going to feel like a hero now, or are they going to feel like a loser now with the promise that they're going to be heroic 5 games from now? And Starfinder, and I think D&D 5th edition and that style of game, the D&D style of game, at least today, the style is, let's start out everyone sort of as a hero. We're going to assume that they're all, like, the characters are adults. They've been through a lot already, and so they have a bunch of skills and a bunch of abilities, and that's where they're going to start. And I think for players, the disadvantage to that is now you have to know a lot. When you look at that character sheet, you have to know about all of these crazy abilities and features that you suddenly have. And, you know, yesterday you didn't know those things existed in the real world. And in the game world, you've been doing this for 20 years or however old your character is. And the counterpoint to that is just to start everyone out really low, where no one has any abilities and they're just regular Joes. But I think the criticism to that is that that's kind of boring to play. And that's not why people play an RPG. They play because they want to feel heroic and do really cool things.
Wasn't Dead Earth a bit like this? I mean, you start out as a loser and you kind of stay a loser or you die, but it was still yeah, fun to play. There wasn't like a way to develop your character to a hero. At least I felt that way.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think it can be done, but well, both ways. And I mean, even I've never quite understood why D&D didn't just use level 1 through 5, let's say, to be, yeah, you're just a loser developing your skills. And for people who don't want to start out as a loser, you can just say, well, I only play in games that start at level 5 or whatever. You know, like, I don't understand why we use one, you know, like why we can't have both, in other words.
Scenarios that aim at people's skill level within that universe sort of thing.
In D&D 5th edition, I think that they should add like 0th level, 4th level, 8th level, because that's like in CR that those exist, so they should add that for people who want to play it like that. When I say like I don't like that I have to specialize, I mean with skills, because I like skills not just because they're useful, but mostly just because I now have more numbers on my character sheet and I like that.
Doesn't Shadowrun have this concept of like three different ways to build a character? You either can build like a character that just starts out in the shadows, and or one that's already accustomed to it a bit, and or a hero shadow runner, and then I think everyone has to build the same type of character, and then the adventure you play is adapted to whatever however you decide to start.
Yeah, and
off.
I quite like that about Shadowrun. I like that you can your game master can say, okay, everyone build a street level character or build a professional character, and you can kind of adjust, tweak your settings as to where you're actually starting out because of that.
That sounds like a good system, I think.
Well, the trade-off is that it takes 8 years to learn Shadowrun, apparently. Okay, next question is the world setting. What did you think of the Starfinder universe, Ken? What you saw of it, at least.
I liked it very much, I must say. I did. The one thing about the whole universe, which we didn't get to cover in the book or in this game period, but that is the fact that there's magic in there. Seems a bit odd to me that there's magic, but that's just my personal.
It's funny you dislike. It's funny that you would mention that, because that was going to be the question that I specifically asked you. So it sounds like you don't prefer your sci-fi with magic, you prefer your sci-fi with sci-fi.
Yeah, because sci-fi with magic is just copping out. All of a sudden we can do something and then that's fine.
I think I do like that Starfinder actually does separate science from fantasy pretty sort of well. Like once you get into the monsters, it gets a little bit dicier, but then again, monsters are interesting anyway, and what looks like quote-unquote magic to when a monster does it doesn't necessarily mean it's magic. Kind of depends on what you're choosing. But if you wanted to play a very science heavy Starfinder game, it is my belief, although I've not actually done it, but it is my belief that it could be done. You could just say nobody's going to build a magic user and we're not going to have this planet of the undead, push that off to the side and have a sci-fi.
Yeah, you could do, but then I suppose you could do D&D in a space universe as well. It's built into the game, so not using it is kind of defeating the game. You know, if you were playing with somebody who really is into magic, then that wouldn't be a great game for them, would it?
No, and that's why I haven't done it yet. I haven't found it. I believe that if you had a group of players who said, we want to play in space, we don't like magic in space, then I think you could run Starfinder as that. So that's my assertion, but it's as yet unproven by me.
You mentioned that there was some other type of game that was more a spacey game, but didn't have magic in it, so why not play that one? Would be my answer.
The reason would be because I know, for instance, as a game master, I know the D&D rules really, really well. So Starfinder, super easy for me to game master. I don't have to learn really anything new. Whereas if I were to run, say, Traveler, then I would have to be learning a whole new system. So
I get it. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Cool.
Yeah. Purely functional. Padraig, what did you think of the world setting?
I loved it. That's my favorite chapter in the core rulebook, just the whole background of the world and stuff. The fact that there's the gap, the gap is so annoying yet so great, because I want to play the game and figure out the lore of the game at the same time. The gap is a gap in history. People who live through it can't remember anything. It's some sort of weird, unexplained phenomenon. No one knows what it is. So there are, if you read closely, there are some stuff which like weren't affected as much by the gap or which lived through it, but all normal, conventional, historical stuff is pretty much all gone. And I like that. I like the fact that there is a blend of magic and and of sci-fi. The fact that there's also like a part in the back which lets you able to convert your pre-existing Pathfinder characters into this game, and that made me think, wait, I didn't know anything about Pathfinder, but could this be like the future of Pathfinder, or a Pathfinder thing where it's like in the future and that's why there's magic? Yeah, I like all the planets, I like all the factions. I love just the entire background of everything and anything and stuff, and that there's a timeline, there's a massive timeline of stuff and a map and anyone who likes lore should definitely read the Pact's World chapter.
Well, as you know by now, I'm a fan of sci-fi settings anyway, more than like the traditional fantasy setting. And unlike Ken, I also don't mind magic. I like sci-fi, and I like magic and dragons and stuff. That's why I also enjoyed Shadowrun. And I think the one thing that, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about the world, but the one thing that makes kind of sense is that you have different races in this world, because it's a space travel, right? So those races can come from different planets, unlike with Shadowrun, where you have this weird awakening where suddenly there are like trolls and elves in the world where there have been none before, or at least not visible. I think the one thing that I found a bit difficult was what I already said before. The world is so different from what we are used to on our planet. I mean, even we kind of had a hard time orienting, because there was no north or south, and sometimes we started again with north and south, but there are no poles, so how do you know where north and south is? And also with the space fight, I mean, it's a three-dimensional world with no gravity. So where is up? Where is down? Why are the spaceships generally traveling on the same plane? I think at one point you said the spaceship can go over the other spaceship, and this kind of doesn't even make sense, because there is no over or under. I mean, they don't even have to have the same alignment with regard to where their wings are and everything. So it's kind of hard to imagine how a world in space works, where it's a lot easier if you're just on Earth in a different future century.
So let me get this straight. You're basically saying that space is hard to know, because we're humans and we live on a round ball floating through space, but we don't actually live in space. But it's
yes,
way
exactly.
easier if you are on another ball floating through space with the same laws of physics as us, because we can navigate then.
Because we can, well, I haven't played the game where you're on a different planet. So all the other games we played were on Earth in a fantasy setting, or in a future
Toro
setting. And then you can
the game we just normally play, it's Toro,
a
completely different planet.
Yeah, true.
Technically,
true.
Even Earth exists
true.
In D&D 5th edition, if I heard it correctly.
Yes.
But we don't play on there, so it's just the fact that weren't on the planet, which we could technically do. So you're basically saying that space is hard to navigate.
Yeah, you keep applying your physical rules, you know, from Earth, right? And a lot of them just don't apply in space, and that's where it kind of gets difficult to figure out what's actually happening.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's complicated.
I feel like Starfinder does make it a little bit even more confusing in a way, because at least this adventure that we played through, Dead Suns, because at times they would have artificial gravity that's, you know, basically sci-fi magic gravity. And then at other times they'd say there's no gravity here. So
at one point there was like a door where on the other side of the door there was artificial gravity. So we didn't know how does this work if you open the door? Are you then pulled into the door by gravity, or are you unaffected until you step over into the hallway?
Baffled, what did you think of the world setting that you saw?
Thinking about stuff that people have been talking about here, and I found some disconnects. I'm not a big fan of zombie stories and vampire stories, so I found myself saying or thinking, how can you kill an undead with a bullet? Like, I mean, I'm thinking while we're playing this, they're already dead. How are you going to kill them? One of the other disconnects that happened for me was with what Ben and Podrick were just saying, was so many of the activities, flipping over the spaceship or barrel rolling, you know, those are airborne techniques that we are aware of from aerodynamic, you know, airplane fighting, which certainly would have absolutely no relevance to an in-space adventure or in-space scenario. So they were kind of disconnects. I didn't mind having them, but those thoughts still crossed my mind, like, you know, how is it that I'm going to kill a zombie with a gun? You know, it just didn't make sense to me. But then, even in reality, when we're talking about what is accepted technology and what is not accepted technology, we have difference of opinions in real life. So for instance, you've got the standard model of the Big Bang Theory versus the Electric Universe model, which is quite a bit different than the Big Bang Theory. And we have people arguing about those things in real life over time, and people who are adherents of one universe are not adherent of the other universe, whether something is magic or something is science, or whether it's real science or pseudoscience. I don't know how you'd actually nail that down. So I think I'm going to play a game that's in a universe that has a world and stuff like that. You just need to be able to say, okay, these are the rules we're going to accept because we want to play this game and we want people to have a good time. And you're just going to have to suspend any of thoughts or feelings you have of other realities, or you don't see it that way sort of thing, because certainly there are disconnects and I had them. And maybe I'm just not used to sinking myself, enveloping myself in these RPG universes yet. And that's why I find they're kind of weird.
I wasn't sure what kind of answers I was going to hear. That's really, really interesting. I'm a fan of the world setting myself, but then I'm kind of a fan of any world setting. It's just kind of, it's fun. And I will say that I quite like one of the things that I quite like about Starfinder is that it does encompass the whole universe. So like whatever you want, you can pretty much do. Like if you have a bunch of players who are like, we really just want to play on a desolate wasteland, well, then you set your adventure on a planet where everything is a wasteland. If they want to play a game set in the jungle, yeah, you know, it's just like you've got everything you could possibly need, and everything is just as likely as anything else. So like I was saying to Ken, if you want to play without magic, then you can play without magic. It really is a sort of an all-purpose science fiction setting. And I mean, even heck, you wouldn't even have to go to a different planet. Like even Absalom Station, the sort of default setting of Starfinder, or the central point, even that has multiple levels. And you can just say, well, it's a really big station. And to you, your universe, quote unquote, is this one level. That's all you know in the world. You don't have the money to get on a starship and jump around space. This is the adventure we're going to play. So it's very flexible, which I quite like.
Yeah, I agree. For instance, you could also solve the problem with, like, how do you imagine navigating in space by just saying, okay, so the Pact World's decided for navigation in space, we're gonna go decide that this is up, that is down, that's that, no,
that's
that
true,
way,
yeah.
That's that way, that's that way, and stuff. For instance, doing something like, okay, it's aligned to the packed world sun, or it's aligned to the center of the Milky Way or something. And that's something people would do because people are very bad at navigating space otherwise. And that would
an ISO standard for space navigation. Yeah, absolutely. No,
if you want to go a step further, you could just say, okay, artificial gravity aligns in this way. So even then the spaceships would align. So I just think that might be a solution.
Some great ideas there. Let's talk about combat. Kind of have a feeling that everyone is going to... I mean, combat is basically the same as combat in D&D. Really, so I don't think we're going to have differing opinions there. If you do, you can speak up. But let's also encompass space combat. Boy, this is a complex question. I'm going to just ask lots of different questions to each of you. Ken, what did you think of combat? And by combat, I mean right now, on the ground combat.
It would have helped to have more than a penknife.
Yes.
Although, you have a club.
Yeah,
you got a club true. Eventually.
Well, the penknife, when I only had a penknife, I was able to throw a d20 and kill a zombie, so that was good.
That was pretty phenomenal.
Then when I got the club, I had a false sense of security and then bit off more than I could chew. But standing as an observer, and by standing I mean lying down dead in a suspended animated state, it was actually quite fun. And that was kind of the reason I went on to the android or asteroid, because it's boring if you weren't going to be involved in the combat. And I didn't have a remote drone to do any of the to sit back in safety and have a remote drone, which in hindsight would have made more sense.
Yes, sir. About the
I don't know what you've got against Swiss Army knives. I mean, I live like 2 kilometers, not even 1 kilometer from the factory where they were made. So they're great tools. I've got a couple of them.
I don't have anything against it. In fact, that was the only thing I had to have a weapon. And that was the only thing that I thought my character, a coward, would have.
Ground combat was good, was just general good. I just liked it. I like that they split the AAC and the KAC. I didn't think that was confusing at all. The only thing was what I already said with the hit points and stuff, and that at first level you have, of course, not really many features. When I was at second level, I just had a heavy bone blade, which for some reason is cheaper than a long sword and better at the same time. So definitely if you're making a character and you're thinking, oh, I want a sword, get a heavy bone blade, because it's cooler, it's cheaper, and it's better. And basically, I could attack twice. If I hit, I could attack twice. And also, it would make them staggered, which would mean that they could only either move or attack, not move and attack, which was very handy.
It's huge, yeah.
Yeah, you have to hit, though. It won't work if you don't hit. If you miss, then sorry, you're out of luck.
As you already said, it's kind of the same as in Dungeons and Dragons with KAC and EAC. Once you've figured this out, and once you've figured the stamina points and hit points out, it's basically more or less the same thing. The one thing I enjoyed is having a drone, so you could technically attack something from two different angles, which was kind of fun. Was different from Dungeons and Dragons, where you're just standing wherever you are standing and attack from there, either with a melee or a ranged weapon.
You also had the benefit of being able to double up your attack because you had that drone.
Yeah, drones are really powerful.
Yes. I don't remember how the rules were, but I think I had to use, if I wanted the drone to move and attack at the same time, I had to use my own move action for this. So I could only either move myself or the drone in one round.
Which I think is kind of a beautiful system. I really like that you can get the two attacks, but you have to sacrifice the sort of security of movement, which, you know, that's not always a big deal, but sometimes it's a huge deal.
Also, as soon as you're positioned, you can attack with the drone and with your own weapon. So you don't, or you can move yourself and just have the drone hover in the same place, and then it still gets to attack.
It's generally recognized that in 5th edition, the combat really is, the main mechanic in combat is the action economy. You know, you get one attack, generally speaking, and getting more than one attack is a very special, I mean, Benny doesn't know this because he's playing a monk, but to most people, yeah, more than one attack is a huge deal. Like, that's really hard to get. So I don't feel like it's as much of a thing in Starfinder. They don't seem to care as much, which I think is fine. I think it works out well. And I think the move, the action economy in 5th edition is kind of probably my least favorite aspect of 5th edition, I think.
I don't mind the action economy. Like,
I don't mind it. I'm just saying it's my least favorite part of 5th edition.
I also don't think it's my least favorite, but that might just be me being only really playing 5th edition, or mm-hmm. only really caring for it because I have those books.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it mostly. I do kind of like the action economy. I don't hate it. If they change it, it wouldn't be too bad for me. I guess it would depend on what it would be replaced with. Yeah, for instance, when it does make some abilities, like you get an extra attack, that's it, and it will take up like an you have to be 5th level, you have to have this thing, and it will take up another thing. That's definitely worth it. Like, compared to another thing where you do extra damage, you're like, ooh, I don't really know. Do I want an extra attack or do I want extra damage? Extra damage means that if I hit, I'm guaranteed to have more damage. Yet if I don't hit, I can attack again. And if I hit twice, I can do way more damage than that just one time. So that's why I like 5th edition. It's not Starfinder, but yeah, I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, I mean, it's a design choice, and I don't think either one is wrong. It's just a different way of approaching it. Baffled, what did you think of combat?
I liked the drone that we had. I didn't think I was going to like it before we started the game out, but considering that I hid behind my drone for pretty much the entire game, I didn't have the issue with having to share moves like Benny did, with coordinating whether he was going to move or taking a move for the drone to be able to fight. I just got to use the drone as my basic proxy. The battles themselves, I'm very, like, I keep hiding behind this newbie persona. I don't know what to expect from a combat thing. I mean, I wish real life's fighting was as nice as rolling a piece of dice and having it over with immediately. It was dicey.
I mean, I guess that's good. If you felt like there was some risk, but not too much risk. And I think it's really interesting the fact that so many people did take the mechanic. We did get a lot of variety in the end of play styles, because yeah, it's worth noting that Baffled played his character such that his character stayed in a spaceship and just sent out his drone to do like literally everything, all of the exploration, all the combat, which, like, you know, like in real life, that's exactly what we would do. Like, if you had the choice of going out and risking your own life or just sending a drone who could basically do everything you could do, except I think your drone couldn't open doors, right? That's one drawback. But other than that, like, it was such a smart thing to do and really a fascinating way.
One thing I had to depend on my teammates for is somebody to recover the drone and repair it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Benny, for that when it did manage to get zapped. I mean, that was its main drawback. Yeah. I couldn't do it myself.
I recovered it and Benny fixed it. Like, I think Zach really was like, Zach wasn't smart enough. It was smart, apparently smarter than the average person, which is disturbing. But he really just was like, oh, look, a room, let's go into it. Really just first intuition, not planning at all, no planning whatsoever needed. And it, for some reason, worked out usually, except with the zombies.
Cool. All right, let's talk now about space combat. And you'll all know that we played two different styles of space combat. One was a custom rule set developed by me for really, I thought, to fit better into the RPG game. Because I felt like the rules for Starfinder's Starship combat, it's basically a separate game. Ken, what did you think of the space combats that we played?
First one I partook in, and the second one I didn't. And the first one seemed fine. All the much better. Actually, that was quite cool and exciting, to be honest. It really felt... it appealed to me on a story level. It felt like you were in, I don't know, Battlestar Galactica or something. It was actually going on.
The first one I can't really remember, but I didn't really hate it. I liked it, but I'm pretty sure. The only problem I had was that I was rolling terrible, so all my epic stunts, which I did, were not great. I also didn't have a +9 in piloting yet, so that wasn't very helpful. The second one, though, was different. It wasn't bad, but then again, we didn't play it with more characters than roles, because there's like 5 roles you can do, and we played with 3 characters, basically. We didn't really experience much limitation, except for the fact that you had to follow the guide thing. It wasn't like you can scan first, fix later. No, it was fix first, scan later, which might, which kind of makes sense. The fact that you can't choose which one you're gonna do first is a little weird. The fact that you scan during the piloting phase is also a little weird. I would put it in the engineering phase, but basically it does make sense. Like, it's supposed to be middle round, so it, like, you acted before, then you're going to fix the wounds of your ship. You're gonna fix your shields, you're gonna fix your hull and stuff. And then you're going to move and scan, and then you're going to shoot. That makes sense. And then I think they thought, like, okay, so you're going into combat, so you're going to skip the engineering phase if it's like your first round, and you're immediately going to scan and move. But in fact, no, you don't skip, because you can do helpful stuff, which would be... which is why I think they should do the scanning part in, like, the engineering phase, because you're gonna scan first, then you're going to be like, okay, we're gonna divert more power to these things, because now you have a plan, and then you're gonna move and shoot stuff. But you could easily, like, fix those problems with just making the characters be able to decide what they're doing, like a normal fight. But it's not necessarily bad, it's not necessarily good, it's different. It doesn't really feel out of place too necessarily.
The one point that kind of confused me with the second, the Starship combat session we had last week, was why would they even put a completely, more or less completely different game into this game? And to be honest, I didn't enjoy the Starship combat as much as everything else in Starfinder. So it kind of seemed a little bit needless to me to put another game into Starfinder. I would have enjoyed it more if Starship Combat was just an adaption of the regular fighting rules, and without all those special rules that made it technically a different game. I think to me it was too, the whole Starship Combat was too restricted. It felt more like a board game and less like an RPG, and I prefer playing an RPG where you have use your own fantasy to figure out what your character is doing than to a board game where you stick to strict rules and follow the rules.
I didn't necessarily equate that it felt like a board game. Now that I think about it, you definitely act like a board game, more strategizing than normally.
As Patrick stated, I don't remember the first games, space combat, all that detailed.
To be honest, I just skipped over this one.
It was a more realistic thing, I think. The second, Starship Combat, I wasn't crazy about it, to tell you the truth. A, we outclassed the other ship by so much, it was kind of to me like a game of Risk. Whoever has the most armies on a property is going to win, because all they got to do is keep throwing dice until they got it. And I don't think that this game with the space combat, the spaceship combat thing, I don't think we could have lost, considering we outclassed them 3-1 on just about everything except whatever that AC was that they had higher than us. But it was clear right from the outset that all we had to do was hang in there and we were going to win. It just didn't have a game to me.
Yeah, and that was my bad. I should have gotten the correct enemy starship stats. But I think that Benny's analogy of the official rules being like a board game is spot on. And yeah, the player agency just is completely removed in Starship Combat, to speak to Padraig's point. Like the fact that you can't scan when you want to scan, you have to wait for a certain phase. It's like, this isn't role-playing. This is like some weird sort of simulations board game system. It just doesn't make any sense by any stretch of the imagination. So it's, you go from complete freedom as your role-playing character to like this bizarre restrictions of spaceship combat. And it just feels, it's a different game. And the fact that none of you seem to remember the initial space combat is great. That's essentially what it was designed to do, is just to fit right into the rest of the game. Doesn't remove you from the role-playing experience. You get to do what you want to do. It should feel very fluid. It is essentially like ground combat, except you all do happen to be in a spaceship, but there's a lot of agency. You get to do stuff, and it doesn't last long either, which is another benefit. Even with you outranking your enemy in that final combat, I mean, it took us like an hour and a half to get through that process. That's just crazy. That's a huge investment on a role-playing game. It's like every combat, every spaceship encounter is going to take at least 90 minutes. And if you only play for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, that's a big chunk of time of not actually role-playing. For the record, though, playing Starship Combat with you guys, the official Starship Combat with you guys, was the first time I ever had fun playing that system. Like, I've played it and game mastered the official Starship Combat several times now, and it was miserable every single time. But I actually had a lot of fun playing with you guys.
Yeah, maybe this was just because we outclassed the other ship.
That definitely probably colored things differently. Although, honestly, Baffled says that that's not very sportsmanlike, but it actually kind of, it did help. Because trust me, we wouldn't have even gotten through the spaceship combat if you hadn't outranked that other starship. Because what ends up happening from experience is that they keep fixing their shields. They keep rebalancing their shields. You keep hitting them. They keep hitting you. You fix your shields. It goes on forever. I mean, it can go on for just hours at a time of time. It is not fun. It's just not fun. The fact that you could actually get their shields down and then explode them was a huge benefit to us all.
I didn't think of that. Yeah, that's really possible. Just, you could be in an eternal fight, constantly shooting, constantly fixing, never getting any progress done.
Yeah, I mean, there is a system eventually that will cause their systems to glitch and do unpredictable things. There is entropy eventually, but it takes a long time to get there from my experience. Generally, people agree that it goes on way too long at the best of times.
So basically what you're saying is it would feel like that one battle we did in the fifth edition D&D thing, which Baffled wasn't in, but sorry that make the reference, but yeah, basically where we were fighting this one guy who would regenerate and frighten us every
the Revenant
time.
Yeah,
and it literally took us like
two sessions
to start,
or something. Yeah,
then the session in the middle, another session to finish it, And it was so long. I'm so glad I skipped that troll that one time. That would have been horrifyingly long, too.
Yeah. Okay, let's do final thoughts. Final thoughts, Ken. Would you play again, for instance?
Nope.
Oh, that's surprising. You seem to have very glowing reviews all the way through, but your answer is no, you'll never play again.
No, I'll never play again. I think it completely turned me off role-playing games. The whole combat thing, the fact that there was very little character development or anything interesting happened, we arrived at a rock and we've killed some monsters and then we flew away. It seems kind of superficial to me, in the same way that, you know, we're in a tavern and we go to a cave and we kill a vampire.
Yeah. Well, for the record though, that is this style of game. Like, you can definitely find RPGs that are not all about combat, so yeah, it just kind of depends.
That's what I told him.
Yeah.
Maybe we should find one of those for our next review.
Yeah, I could definitely drum up a system that actually actively discourages combat. I would say Dead Earth, for instance, discouraged combat because you were pretty fragile in theory.
But I think a period, I would need a period away from it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll invite you back some other time.
Off the first few games was good, and oddly enough, listening to the games that you did on HPR or even Lost in Bronx as one, that was more interesting to me, and it was more interesting listening to the combat in that for some weird reason. But being in it myself, I just felt I'm sitting here now, I can't do anything, and I have to wait for six people to go.
Yep.
Whereas in real life it doesn't happen like that. But listen to the podcast of the show, it's kind of weird because, okay, now we're cutting to the action scene. The first guy has shot, and then the second guy has shot, third guy has shot. But I'm sitting there wondering, okay, what am I going to do? I've got this excellent Swiss Army knife, highly recommended. What am I going to do in the next thing? Yeah, it wasn't as interesting to play as it was to sit down and listen to, oddly enough.
I think one point you mentioned is also our party was a little bit too large, so it kind of took a long time until you got to do something again in a fight because there were so many people fighting.
Yeah, that was generally in the beginning, I'm pretty sure. After that, like with four people is, it still takes a little time, but it's a lot less.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, amazingly, even in fifth edition, and we only play with three player characters, that can take time. So I think RPG combat, because it breaks out into those turns, it is, I think some people do find it pretty boring. I don't find it boring personally, but I know lots of people who find combat in RPG very boring, which is fine. The default setting for D&D style game, like, yeah, the D&D derivative games such as Starfinder and 5th edition is like pretty heavy combat. Like, that's just part of the game. People, there's a crowd that really, really likes that. And I get really impatient with RPGs that are too talky, strangely enough.
Well, to me, I felt it was a bit of a missed opportunity. We had this cool spaceship. And we got this cool, got 1, 2, 3, 4 different spaceships that were all cool. And we didn't get to, I felt they were a bit like a two-dimensional thing. It's probably what they were, because they're just a map. But it didn't really matter that,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was no novelness about any of the spaceships. It was just, you're on the spaceship and it's going to be faster. You're on this spaceship and it's going to be slower. There was no meat on the bone of the spaceships, I felt.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we were playing an adventure path that is very much like, you know, get the players here, get them there. That is quite restrictive for a 4-week game. It's kind of almost, I think, kind of important. But there is a different style of playing where you just let the players decide what they want to do. You know, they get in a spaceship, they decide where to go, they go to a world, you decide what the world has on it, and they explore it, you know, that sort of thing. Different style of game. And probably not my specialty, frankly. I had a game master who really, really did that sort of thing really well, where he could just come up with all kinds of stuff off the top of his head, and it was always amazing. But yeah, I think for the short games anyway, if you give the players too much agency, strangely, I think that it starts to stall, because then everyone's just sort of puttering around without any purpose. So I think for the shorter games, railroading the players is a little bit of an essential thing. I could be wrong on that. That's just my opinion. I think that's really interesting, Ken, that that you you want a little bit more story development out of your RPGs. I think that's totally a fair criticism. To be fair, you guys on our fifth edition game, you guys do a really surprisingly good job of avoiding combat sometimes, which is cool. So, and it does demonstrate, I think, yeah, it can be done. It's just the game master has to be open to it, which is easier to do, like I say, when there's like this, just this great expanse of endless time. You know, it's like, I don't care how long it takes you to get through the abyss. Like, you can take 5 weeks or 1 week, you know, it doesn't matter. Whereas in the Starfinder game, I knew that I needed to get us through this adventure in 4 weeks, and that was that. So yeah, a little bit of a different requirement
in the D&D fifth edition thing. I mostly try to avoid combat for the sole reason of it takes time. Mm-hmm. It takes more time to do combat than to avoid combat. It takes more in-game time, maybe. Overall, it might take more time, but we can do more in one session if we don't go into combat.
Great point.
I like combat. I might even love combat, but it takes lots of time, and I just want to play D&D, and I want to progress in the story. Otherwise, it doesn't feel like we did that much. So yeah, that's why I usually try to avoid combat. Plus, then it's easier with you have all your spell levels, all the stuff safer.
Oh, and similar to me rushing you through a Starfinder game, I'm going to have to rush us through the rest of this review because we've only got about 15 more minutes. Padraig, final thoughts? Would you play again?
Yes, definitely. I enjoyed it. Wouldn't say it's better than 5th edition. I like 5th edition more. That might also just be because I have more books, I have more experience, I have better characters and stuff. But yeah, I do like this. I just like fantasy a little more than sci-fi, but yeah, it's enjoyable. Definitely would play again. Yeah, 7 to 8 out of 10. 7.5 out of 10, I would say.
If you ask me whether I want to play another Starfinder game or wash the dishes, I definitely go for Starfinder. If you ask me whether I want to play Starfinder or Shadowrun, I'd go for Shadowrun. I can't exactly pinpoint it to anything, but to me, the whole story in the game also felt a bit flat. I enjoyed the first session on the space station. I don't know for what reason, but as soon as we entered the starship, it kind of, at some points, it was a bit boring. Even the fights were that I thought the best fight was the first one where I'm not sure who was there. I think that's the first session where Philip
and
McNally.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
McNally,
oh,
and you.
It was just
yeah.
me and Philip.
Something like that. Possibly. Yeah.
For some reason, this was more enjoyable. I think I just prefer, as I said before, like closed worlds where I know how they work and where I know where my character lives and everything to open space.
This is really interesting, almost feedback, I would say, because it's interesting because that first session was the least scripted session that we had because I was stalling for time. So a lot of that was just me making stuff up to sort of give you guys something to do, which
maybe it's just your imagination is better than the books.
I mean, I think maybe this book wasn't the best adventure, which kind of surprises me. And I kept going back and forth between should I run this adventure or not? And then I thought, well, this was the adventure that they put out concurrently with the game. Like, it was the first adventure. They came out upon release. That's the adventure everyone sort of had to choose. If you wanted to play a pre-written adventure, that was what was available. So I thought, that's what we'll do, sort of like to emulate the everyone else's first impression. I don't know if that was the right choice. I feel like now maybe it wasn't. But then again, you know.
No, the purpose of this is to try out the game. And that's what we were doing.
But I mean, at the same time, we can try the game with a made up story too. And I think that would be equally valid. It would just be a different tactic.
I definitely agree that the first few sessions were a lot more enjoyable. And then it kind of got a bit.
I think I liked being like, I wasn't there at the very like first, you could call it, the one where the people who Like, I'm pretty sure that was with the people who mistook the time.
Yeah.
Day. Yeah. Maybe I should have mistaken the day. But I like the spaceship battle the most. Yeah. The battles on the spaceship with the dog things. Those I liked exploring the thing. It was very scary though. Like sci-fi is way scarier than fantasy. Sometimes in the fifth edition thing, I got scared. Like when there was when Lenny was attacked, for instance, in the very first adventure, and we didn't know what it was. He just saw a creepy doll there, and then he was attacked, and so we burnt the house down. that was how I felt. Like I was scared because oh no, something attacked. There's a creepy doll. It's in an abandoned house. Let's burn it down. It's your instinctual reaction. But this adventure was scary. It was just the zombie dog things, the zombies. It was all pretty the space stuff just makes it way more like with Firefly. You also have sometimes with some of those episodes, which isn't a bad thing, but it's definitely something you should know.
Yeah Baffled, final thoughts / would you play again?
Well, I don't have a lot of experience, so I would say, yeah, I'd play it, man, because I had a really good time. I don't know really what I was expecting. I really enjoyed the interaction and watching everybody else play and everybody else's ideas and come up with different scenarios and how they would do things. I found that fascinating. I did not find at any point that I was bored waiting for my turn to be on screen again, because it was for me just enjoyable to watch what everybody else was coming up with and doing, and I had a good time with that. I wish we would have spent more time exploring the spaceship before moving over to the asteroid, because I was having a good time finding out what was in all the different rooms and what was behind door A and door B, and ouch, door C killed me, sort of thing. So I had a good time. At this juncture, I don't think I'd want to play that starship combat thing again, but the actual scenario we played or more in that universe, yeah, I'd have a good time with that. I did have.
Cool. Great. Thanks, guys, for the thoughts. It sounds like we have reviewed Starfinder. So next week we'll start a different game, which I'll announce on the Hacker Public Radio mailing list. Everyone is, of course, welcome to join in. Anyone listening to this is welcome. Anyone on the mailing list is welcome to join in. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.